welcome to the show this Sunday, September 10th, 2006, or the 17th of Elul 5766 on the Hebrew calendar. I'm Tamar Yonah.
I'm Alex Treman.
And Alex, you're joining me here. Malka's not here today. Welcome to the show. So nice to have you.
Thanks. It's so much fun to be here.
A lot of news today. We're going to be covering what was, what is, what might be. We're going to be speaking with David Bedin, who's just going to be coming out of a cabinet meeting at the Knesset in just another few minutes. As well, we'll be speaking with Brigitte Gabriel, that heroic Lebanese woman who tells it like it is. As well, we're going to be speaking about the 12 tribes of Israel and the 10 lost tribes. Where did they go? With Yair Davidi from www.britam.org. And we're going to be talking about the upcoming anniversary of 9/11, September 11th, and the conspiracy theories coming out, letters and articles in the papers now coming out. Fury as academics claim 9/11 was an inside job. What do you think? Was it an inside job? Do you believe in conspiracy theories, or do you balk at them? We want to know what you think and why, and we'll have that coming up after the news headlines.
Well, we have a very special dignitary, a very special guest in the region today. In fact, he's probably wrapping up a meeting maybe two or three stone throws away from our bunker here in Beit El in the Palestinian Authority capital of Ramallah.
You don't say.
It's a very proper guest. We're talking about none other than Tony Blair.
Bloody.
He is the Prime Minister of Great Britain. He's been asked to step down, in fact, and he will step down before his party's convention at the end of the year. But he is therefore what people like to call either a lame duck Prime Minister or a Prime Minister that is just looking to get his face in the history books. And therefore, he's back in the Middle East trying to jumpstart the roadmap peace plan, which was put together by the quartet, which includes the United States, the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union, Russia, and the European Union, amongst others.
Yawn.
Yeah. Well, you know, basically the real story here is not that Tony Blair is pushing the peace plan, pushing the talks between Ehud Olmert and Mahmoud Abbas, but the real story is that Ehud Olmert is the one that has backtracked on the whole platform of Kadima. The platform of Kadima, the reason why it was formed, its whole essence was to push forward unilateral withdrawal. But now, even those on the left side of the political spectrum here in Israel that have been pushing disengagement for a long time, they have already come to the conclusion that we withdrew from Gaza, we have Hamas stand in Gaza. We withdrew from Lebanon, we had a Hezbollah attack us with 4,000 rockets, putting 2 million of our residents in shelters for a month. They see what happens when we withdraw unilaterally. And they said, unilateral withdrawal, this doesn't work. So what is left to try? The only thing that could possibly be left, which is to resume negotiations with this very nice partner for peace that we have sitting right over here in Ramallah, none other than the Palestinian Authority.
Which is essentially the same thing. They're both calling, both plans, the realignment plan by Olmert and the roadmap, both call for you and I to be out of here, out of Beit El, out of our homes. And so I don't really see what the difference is except for the unilateral part.
Right. And you mentioned also another thing right before we started the show, which is the completion of a new border crossing between our region of Samaria and Jerusalem called Chizma. This is where the junction is. And this is the wall, the partition barrier, is being completed rapidly. And it's not there, like they say, just to prevent suicide bombers from crossing into Israel. If that was the case, then they would have failed, because suicide bombers have penetrated the fence into Israel. But rather, this is set up to be a border, a permanent border for the state of Israel. And this week's Parsha, Ki Tavoh, we just read it, it says one of the things that you'll be accursed if you do is to move the boundary of your fellow. And right here, our country is moving the boundaries, trying to kick you and me tomorrow out of our homes, so that Tony Blair can have his face in the picture books, in the history books, alongside Mahmoud Abbas and Ehud Olmert. They'll all be kissing and hugging so that they can say that they're the ones that brought about peace in the Middle East. But it's really crazy. And to think that Kadima was formed to move away from bilateral negotiations. The whole idea of having a partner for peace seemed extinct here when Kadima was founded. Now, because Olmert has failed in his war against Lebanon, he is going back to the old plan because, quite frankly, he can't think of anything new.
And it was interesting because before I did the show today, Alex, I was looking at some of the peace plans that we've had in the past and why the roadmap is going to fall into the trash bin, just like the rest. Do you remember Oslo? You remember Oslo 1 and Oslo, then there was Oslo 2 because Oslo 1 didn't work.
I'm waiting for Oslo 3.
Then there was the Geneva Accord, the roadmap, of course, Camp David, the Taba Talks, the Mitchell Report, the Tenet Plan, the Zini Plan, the Saudi Peace Plan, the Nusayba Ayalon Plan, and there's MEFTA, which is a Middle East Free Trade Area Plan, which I've gone into other shows, and I'm not going to do that now, but we will this week.
It's MEFT up. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's right. Very good. It's MEFT up. But plan after plan after plan, yawn, 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 yawn. Roadmaps going to go in the history done. And you know what? So interesting about these plans. I'm holding list. Everyone, listen to this. Holding list in my hand right here on this piece of paper. Every single one of these plans calls for land for peace. Every single one of them, Israel loses out on them. Israel has to give up land, the Arabs have to promise peace. Israel has to give up land, the Arabs have to promise peace. Israel has to give up land, yawn, yawn, yawn.
It's the exact opposite of the real formula for peace, which is staking the claim to your land. You know, when you just say, hey, I want this land because this is important to me and it's important to my religion as a Jew living in the land of Israel, that's how you get peace. When you're committed to the land, that's where the peace comes from.
All right, other news headlines.
Yeah, you know, the gay pride parade.
Boo.
They're taking their case now to the Supreme Court.
I think we should have an adulterers parade, a pedophile parade. What else?
You know, why don't we just have a I eat pork parade or a I like seafood parade?
I'm against even having a heterosexual parade. That belongs in your bedroom. Doesn't belong in the public streets where our kids are walking down.
Right, yeah, you know, it's unbelievable, but
so what about
they had planned, they had a new idea after they canceled their parade in August because of the war. They had a great new idea when they were going to have their parade. The day before the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, one of the holiest, holiest days in the entire year, the day before was going to be the gay pride parade, and the police had a convenient excuse as why to postpone this parade again, because they said they have to mobilize to protect all the synagogues and all that before the holiday, and to a certain extent, they're correct, but, it was convenient for them, like a good reason to give them to cancel it, and at least they took it, but now, the gay pride parade organizers are taking their case to the Supreme Court, a Supreme Court which is known to be lefty in Israel, a very all-powerful, a Supreme Court which can snap its fingers and determine what is ethical and what is not ethical in 1 second. And we're going to see whether or not we're going to have a gay pride parade. There's many people that think that there should be no gay pride parades of any sort in Israel, let alone the world gay pride parade in the world's holiest city. But speaking of the Supreme Court, Supreme Court is coming up into the news all of a sudden because our Supreme Court Justice President Aaron Barak is stepping down at the age of 70 after many years of service, and he's being replaced by his understudy Dorit Beinish, and she is known to be even further to the left than her predecessor. She is trying to make the Supreme Court as powerful as possible. We've heard her speak in the past and saying that she feels that it's her job to step in and control what the army is allowed to do, control what the government is allowed to do, control what laws the Knesset is allowed to legislate. She was self-picked by Aaron Barak. It's not a democratic selection process. And really, the mainstream media in Israel is lauding the appointment of the first female as the new president of the Supreme Court, and they're lauding it as a great day for democracy. But really, I think it's a very sad day for the state of Israel that we can choose a Supreme Court justice that represents the values of a true Jewish people.
Mm. Next headline.
Do I have more headlines? Yeah, there is another headline, a big one. You know, there was 30,000 people at least in Tel Aviv on Thursday night protesting against Ehud Olmert and company.
And Saturday night, last night.
Oh, last night again. Mm-hmm. For failing to set up a state commission of inquiry into the failures of the Lebanon war. This is a huge headline. One thing that disappointed me the most about this headline was that many on the right wing in our camp, so to speak, they weren't in attendance, and I couldn't understand why. But the government has been stalling now close to a month after the conclusion of the war in Lebanon, which was an utter failure on all levels, and yet they cannot put together a simple commission of inquiry into the matter to determine who really is at fault. And it's a stalling game played by the main conspirators, none other than Ehud Olmert, Amir Peretz, and Dan Chalutz, all of them to save their own heads, all of them to try to postpone the country's turning on them, giving them another week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks in order to keep their government intact. And I think that when you put all these pieces together and you see that all of a sudden Tony Blair comes to the region and Ehud Olmert announces that he wants to come back to bilateral negotiations, these are stalling tactics. These are ways to get the country's attention off of the failures that were in Lebanon. If you remember, right after the war, all of a sudden Avi Dichter and Ehud Olmert were talking about reestablishing negotiations with Syria. But the country did not go for that. So they dropped it. And they moved on, and the new postponement, the new stalling tactic is now bilateral negotiations.
And a lot of arrests of different people in the public world. Let me read you something that Daniel from Jerusalem writes. He writes here, Tamar Shalom, President Katsav is under pressure to suspend himself during the Supreme Court swearing-in ceremony because of allegations that he raped a secretary. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, however, will not be asked to suspend himself under suspicions that he raped an entire country.
Yeah, seriously.
In a related story, Olmert decided not to convene the Commission of Inquiry after not a single candidate could be found who had not received a governmental appointment from him. This is just a joke, everybody.
It's a joke, but in fact, we're talking about these commissions of inquiry, and right now, Ehud Olmert had said that he was going to create two commissions, one to investigate the political response to the war, one to investigate the military response to the war, and then a third committee was going to be set up by the State Controller's Office. Now, in his own political committee, he had already appointed now three different people that were very closely tied to himself and got their previous jobs through his appointments. The latest one.
What do you think that they'll find in those reports if they do it?
Right. Yeah, it's unbelievable. And Amir Peretz, when he sets up the military commission, he assigned to be the head of that commission his own war advisor, the one that was telling him what to do because he doesn't know anything. Yeah, because he doesn't know anything about war. Amir Peretz being a labor chief,
right,
for so many years. So the IDF former general that was helping him run the war, he's going to be the one that's going to establish a committee to see if he did his own good job. And I'll tell you, when you're talking about jokes, it's no coincidence, I think, that the former labor chief takes over the IDF, and now all of a sudden all those soldiers want to go on strike.
Well, we wish the soldiers luck, and we should be there. I didn't even know about the demonstration until last night, and I don't know why it wasn't advertised in our part of the world here, because I know a lot of us would have wanted to be there.
And there's been a reservist protest, which has been going on outside the Knesset now for over 3 weeks, and if you want to read more about that, you can do so at IsraelNationalNews.com, a great feature piece by none other than Ezra Halevi on the reservists' protest day in and day out in front of the Knesset.
Right. I think some of them are on a hunger strike as well. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So this is the thing here in Israel. The people are, and what's refreshing about this, Alex, I find, is that it's from the left wing. It's from the non-religious, especially Zionistic, but from like the regular secular, more left wing camp of them saying, how could you send us to war the way you did without training, without food, without water, without the right provisions? Many of the soldiers were complaining that the guns, that weapons that they were issued were weapons that their father used 20 years ago.
And soldiers that did not have water and food for as long as 24 hours or even 2 or 3 days in certain cases. Soldiers that were forced to break into Lebanese grocery stores just in order to eat and drink. Saving soldiers that were injured without water for over 24 hours. It's unbelievable. And especially in the heat that was and the heat that is today. And you want to talk about a news item.
It's like an oven outside.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's really hot. And in fact, I read one story about a soldier who was forced, and he himself said it was disgusting to him. He was forced to go to the body of one of the terrorists that he had killed and take his canteen of water and drink it. These were the conditions that our government sent our soldiers out under. So this is what they're complaining about, among other things, and we wish them the best of luck. Let's go now to David Bedin from www.israelbehindthenews.com. David Bedin just came out of a cabinet meeting from the government. Welcome to the show, David.
Yes, thank you. I was at the Israel cabinet meeting today. And the Israel cabinet meeting today, one of the many things were discussed, some of which puts us in another planet. According to the Israel cabinet secretary, Israel's prime minister is now encouraging Shimon Peres to once again engage in economic relations, economic projects with the Palestinians as a way to perhaps build a new era. And, the gewalt that I felt I wanted to say, you mean this is another new Middle East? But that's one of the things that came out today. Also, I asked my innocent questions, which I always like to ask, like, tell me, since Peres and Olmert, they're all talking about a new era with the Palestinians, according to the Israeli law. There's supposed to be this was something that was enacted by the Knesset and by the government several years back. There's supposed to be an ongoing monitoring mechanism of the Palestinian Authority to see how much incitement there is. And the cabinet secretary looked at me and said, I don't know what you're talking about. Again, I must be from another planet, I guess. Then the cabinet secretary happened to mention the increase of smuggling from Egypt in a passive way. I said, well, are you putting in any complaints to Egypt? And the answer was, well, we're having discussions with them. I said, I didn't ask about discussions. I asked, are you putting in any complaints? I said, well, you can call it that if you want. I said, you know, this is part of what happened in today's cabinet session. I also handed in a letter to the Israeli government asking why it is, and I didn't expect an answer on the spot, but they received my letter. Why is it right now that the government of Israel is ordering the arrest of young soldiers who did not show up to their bases during the Katif and Shomron evacuation? And many of these people, of course, fought in Lebanon. And in a name I will not use because I'm not permitted to use, but they did come to the family of a soldier who was killed and asked him why, and they wanted to arrest him for not fighting in Lebanon. Fighting in Katif.
They had been killed
in Lebanon, and they came with orders to do that. So it was an amazing.
Do you have the name of that family?
Yes, I prefer not to disclose it because I do not have their permission.
Uh-huh. All right. Maybe we'll be in touch after the show. That's some story. David, what was the feel? What was the reaction of the people in the cabinet when Olmert suggested that Shimon Peres come back into the picture in a heavy way in negotiating with the PLO?
The members of the cabinet were eating their burekas and drinking their coffee, and we looked at the cabinet secretary, reviewed the protocols. There were no questions except Ehud Olmert encouraging him to do so. That was the phone.
Was Peres at the meeting?
Shimon Peres was at the meeting, absolutely.
Uh-huh. So there was no balking, there was no nothing, just munching on their burekas and drinking their coffee?
Absolutely. Sure, the PLO, Peres' loyal organization, you know, it continues. That's my humor, haha. But that's what happened. That's what we saw today.
Was there any talk at this cabinet meeting about the putting together of an official state commissioned inquiry into the failures of the war in Lebanon?
No, there was not.
So they're ignoring the soldiers and the demonstrators, the people of Israel. They're ignoring them.
This was not discussed, no. This was not discussed, and
we're paying these people salaries.
Well, amongst other things, yes, that's true.
How long do you think that this current cabinet that was sitting in a room is gonna be able to sit together in the future?
I work for a non-profit agency, therefore I'm not a prophet. Sorry.
David, what do you have to sum up everything that you've seen today?
Well, what I've seen is the following. First of all, last week we revealed the fact that the Reverend Jesse Jackson came to Israel with the marvelous news that the hostages were alive. A few of us discussed this with Jackson. He went back to Beirut and was more or less given the boot from Beirut and was sent back to America with nothing, with basically empty-handed. And there is the cabinet session today, and there was no. They said we have no word of any life from the two hostages. They did say that they do have confirmation that Gilad Shalit is alive. That's something else I can mention. Those are some of the developments that are happening. At the cabinet session, someone from the Shabak gave a report about the Hezbollah looking for new ways to attack Israel in such a way that it will not cause Israel to launch a massive attack. That's something else that was mentioned today. In other words, I interpret that as me understanding that they may find ways to attack Jews in Judea, Samaria, and that would not cause Israel to launch a formidable attack. So that may be their next move. Who knows? But that was something that a senior official of the Shabak did report to the government today.
All right. David Bedin, thank you so much for being with us. And if you want to find out more, go to his website, www.israelbehindthenews.com. Let's go now to Kentucky. We've got Bill on the phone. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tamar. How are you doing?
Hey there.
Good to hear from you. I sure do enjoy talking to you over the internet. It's fun.
Well, that's great. So what's up?
What's up? Man, I tell you, whole thing of Order Out of Chaos is, I believe, coming to its apex right now. And I just wanted to maybe touch base with you. Do you know anything about the Georgia Guidestones? The Georgia Guidestones. It's a set of granite pillars that it's been erected in Georgia.
Okay.
And it's got the 10 recommendations for the world on it. And number one is to maintain humankind, the population, under 500 million in perpetual balance.
I've heard of this, and I did see some type of report on television about that. Right. So go ahead.
Yeah, well, anyway, so I think that this whole thing with Israel and the world, the situation in the big picture, Tamar, is that they're just getting ready to go ahead and implement this Illuminati plan to go ahead and just diminish the population and take over the world. And what's going on with Israel right now is just a big part of it.
Okay, so when you're talking about Illuminati, you're talking about some type of secret-type Masonic groups that are believed to be behind what's called the New World Order, and that they're trying to take over the world, and that's what a lot of people list as a conspiracy theory. Is that correct?
That's correct, Tamara. It's not just one group. It's this cabal. You want to look at it, the Skull and Bones, the Freemasons, the Bilderberg, CFR, Trilateral Commission.
Right.
And countless number of others that I don't know how they coordinate, but it seems like because they all have this same goal, it's as if they just kind of bounce off of each other. And I think that right now they see that with Israel in a state of confusion, with the Muslims all organized now, I think that they see that they can take they can fulfill a whole bunch of their goals right now by eliminating a huge part of this population.
Okay, you have about 30 seconds.
Bill,
we only have about 30 seconds, so just give me really quick, you know, in 10 seconds, give me two lines. What are two of the things they want to fulfill that you're saying?
That's what I was getting ready to tell you. They're getting ready to get rid of a huge amount of the population of the world, and they want to eliminate, or they won't, but they want to eliminate Israel.
All right. You know, we're going to have to stop there just because we're going to be taking a news break. Maybe you'll call in towards the end of the show when we're going to open up the lines for all of you to call in and give us your opinions on what you think about conspiracy theories. Do you believe them? You don't believe them? Was September 11th 5 years ago an inside job or not? What are their questions? What are they accusing the government of? Do you believe it? You don't? I want to know why. When we get back, we're going to be finding out about what happened to the lost 10 tribes of Israel. And about missionizing Jewish people with Yair Davidi from www.britom.org. If you have any comments or questions, you can call in 1-800-270-4288.
We'll be back right after the break.
All my life needed was a sense of some place to go, not your job. You're not how much money you have in the bank.
Our great war is a spiritual war.
We don't have a lot of time on this earth. Human beings were not meant to sit in little cubicles staring at computer screens all day.
So what's stopping you? Oh, you're comfortable, right? This is a life of convenience for you, and any attempt to change it would shatter the pathetic microcosm you've fashioned for yourself.
Israel National Radio. Free your mind.
Tarnation. Them news folks always expect Israel to give in.
Boy, don't listen to them half-truths about Israel. Get your news about Israel from Israel.
Now, how am I going to do that?
On the internet from Israel National Radio. They've got news, commentaries, and much more.
Israel National Radio. The popular voice of the people of Israel.
Back here at Israel National Radio, I'm Tamar Yonah.
I'm Alex Treman.
And we invite you to join us in our virtual studio. This is a unique radio experience where you can listen to the show together with people from all over the world while we're broadcasting live. So if it's between 3 and 5 p.m. Israel Holy Time, or if it's between 8 and 10 a.m. New York Eastern Time, that means you can join us in our virtual studio. Right now we have people from all over the world. Let's see, from Of course, Israel and Florida and Ohio, Kentucky, Pennsylvania. Where's Milwaukee? I don't know. Maine, San Fernando Valley, California, Montreal, Quebec, London, England, Florida, Dayton, Ohio, Boston, Spain. That's pretty cool. Calgary, Baltimore, Canton, Portland, Oregon, Texas, Belfast, Northern Ireland, and Melbourne, Australia. Welcome everybody to the show and join us in our virtual studio. Just go to our webpage at IsraelNationalRadio.com. Go to the upper left-hand side where you'll see a blue rectangle that says virtual studio. Click there. Follow the instructions and join us where you can talk about the show with people from all over the world. Right now we have on our show someone from Australia originally. We have Yair Davidi. I've had him on the show before. He is the author of probably half a dozen books on whatever happened to the lost 10 tribes of Israel. And he's from www.britam.org. That's spelled B-R-I-T-A-M, like in mother. Britam.org. Welcome to the show, Yair.
Shalom, Tama.
Hi there, Yair. Yair, you have a lot of fans from all over the world. There's a lot of Gentiles all over the globe who are waking up one day having this feeling that they love the Jewish people all of a sudden. They want to find out about Israel. They want to know about Judaism. They're not ready to convert. They're not interested maybe to convert, but they feel somehow they're tied in with the destiny of the Jewish people. Why don't you tell us what your work has been doing in order to let us know what happened with the Lost Tribes and who they might be today?
So we've done a serious research using both biblical sources, the Tanakh, and also from Hazal, Jewish religious sources, together with history, linguistics, archaeology, even DNA studies. In other words, from every field that could have something possibly to say on the subject, we've gone into it and we've found that all the evidence from these different fields converge on one conclusion, that the overwhelming majority of the Lost Ten Tribes of Israel are to be found in the descendants of Western peoples today.
Of Western people?
Yes.
Okay.
Especially people from the British Isles, from France, from Scandinavia, Holland, Belgium.
And how do you know that?
We know it from the first of all the Tanakh. The Bible says that the Lost Ten Tribes will be in the Isles of the Sea. They will be on the coasts. They will have a certain characteristics that we only find amongst these peoples, that they will be represented by a lion and a unicorn. They will be known as a Britam, or Britannia, which was a name for Britain in the
Britam, which means the covenant of the nation, I guess. Is that how you would translate it?
Yes.
Is similar to Britain, Britam?
Yes, Britam was also another way of pronouncing the word Britain in the Middle Ages.
Uh-huh. And so what tribe settled in the British Isles?
It's used in Isaiah explicitly concerning those 10 tribes.
What tribe settled in the British Isles?
In principle, members of all of the tribes settled there, but the dominant element was from the tribes of Joseph, of Ephraim and Manasseh.
Ephraim and Manasseh?
Okay.
Okay, so Ephraim and Manasseh are the two tribes that you say went to the British Isle area.
Yes.
All right, what about places, let's say, like Holland?
So Holland was dominated by the tribe of Zebulun. And it was one of the prophecies concerning that Jacob gave to Zebulun was Zebulun Nachof Yamim Yishkon in Hebrew, that Zebulun would dwell on the shores of the sea. And Holland is the only country in the world that literally fulfills that prophecy.
How's that?
Two-thirds, one-third of Holland is below sea level. Another third needs protection from the sea. And they have dikes and all kinds of waterworks to protect themselves from inundation from the ocean. And they literally do dwell on the shores of the sea. Two-thirds of the country is literally speaking on the shores of the sea, which is a prophecy given to Yaakov. Also we found in the maps of Ptolemy, a Greek-Egyptian geographer, who based himself on Phoenician sources, that there was a people dwelling in the region of northern Holland known as the Zebulun Goy, which is in Hebrew, the Goy means people, and Zebulun is another form of Zebulun.
What about the other tribes?
So we have similar proofs for the other tribes. Denmark was dominated by Dan.
Denmark Dan. Interesting.
Yes, Denmark means the mark of Dan. These are just similarities of expression. You can say that they're nice, that it's a coincidence.
So there would be much additional evidence
which supports these indications.
Yair, can you tell me how did it happen? Take us through it. You have the Jews; they're leaving Israel because we're being overridden by another superpower. They're invading Israel. They're running for their lives, right? They're being dispersed.
Yes.
So all of a sudden, a shipload of Jews come off from the tribe of Dan. They get to the area of Denmark, and the people, the inhabitants of Denmark, which is not called Denmark then, if you're saying that, it's called the Mark of Dan. What do they say? Oh, look at there's these Hebrews here from the land of Yisrael, and now we're going to call ourselves Denmark. I mean, how did it happen? Explain it.
It wasn't so simple. The Assyrians conquered the northern tribes, all of the northern tribes, and they transported them. They took them to other areas of their empire and resettled them as colonists, dependent upon them, in areas that had been devastated by war. And in these areas, and they also conscripted them or used them in their armed forces and in their administration. They exiled Israelites became a very important element very quickly in the whole Assyrian apparatus, in the whole Assyrian empire. After that, with the wars, there were different permutations, different changes, and so on. And they asserted their independence for a short while. They even took over the Assyrian empire. Then they lost and were expelled from the Middle East altogether, went northwards, or they split up into several different sections. And over the course of centuries, in different groups of them all converged in the same regions, as if pushed by divine providence to go to specific areas.
Okay, let me ask you another question. I know that whenever I go to Chutz La'aretz, which is outside of Israel, and maybe you can say the same thing, Alex, the Jews always try to stick together because they have to make a synagogue, they have to find a quorum of 10 men to pray with. You have to kind of like make a community in order to be able to fulfill the commandments as best as possible. Why didn't these Jews, when the tribe of Dan went, let's say, to Denmark, Mark, why didn't they form synagogues? Why didn't they retain their Jewish identity until today?
Because they, even before being exiled, for 200 years, if not more, they had already stopped being Jews effectively. According to the Midrashim, they had stopped Brit Milah. They no longer kept the Brit Milah. They no longer didn't circumcise themselves.
So they assimilated, you're saying. So you're saying that they assimilated.
Not only they assimilated, even before being exiled, or even once they were still in the land of Israel, they became effectively non-Jewish from a religious point of view.
So if that's the case, then how would Denmark know to call itself the Mark of Dan?
No, so they had a legend that their forefather was called Dan. They still retain, here and there were legends, there were certain traditions, and some of them even kept some of the mitzvot. Or they had, that's how we traced them, they had their linguistic proofs. Some of them had spoke languages which had elements of Hebrew in them.
Mm.
They had legends which recall their biblical origins. They retained something, but it was broken up. It was mixed in with pagan ideas. It was also, they had undergone, moved from one place to another. They'd been conquered by other peoples, absorbed other peoples, learned to change their language several times. It's very similar now. If you take a Jew, God forbid, loses his religion, stops being Jewish overseas. I'm not talking about the land of Israel where there's a reinforcing element, but overseas, after three or four generations, you're very lucky to find someone who remembers their Jewish ancestry.
Yair, this is Alex. Is there any chance for recovering these lost tribes for the Jewish people?
So, I don't know. That's not our task is just to try and locate them. According to prophecy, according to Jewish tradition, the Talmud and so on, eventually the lost ten tribes will return and it will be a reunification between Judah and Joseph, between also in Ezekiel 37, throughout the Bible in effect. Throughout our sources, that's what it says will eventually happen. But how it's going to happen, we don't know. This is something for the Mashiach or the prayer leading up to it. And now we cannot say. We cannot say what if we are supposed to do anything in that direction or not. But what we can say, we can. This knowledge is good to know. It gives us an understanding of the Bible, of our sources, of history. And also we can tell these people what is going on and let them work it out for themselves. And also they should realize that the Jews are their brothers and that we have a mutual destiny, a mutual task in the world. There's a common bond between us and both sides should realize it and work towards bringing it to fruition.
I am assuming that you have a lot of Gentiles who are attracted to your research and perhaps are trying to claim, I don't want to say the dynasty, but, you know, replacement theology. Some of them might even be missionaries. What is your stance on people who come after your research and try to do replacement theology or try to convert Jews to Christianity?
Okay, so first of all, these people exist. They're out there. They're out there without any connection to what we say. They were out there before we came along, and a lot of them are just bad eggs. They just have evil inclinations, and there's nothing much you can do about it. But a good portion of them, apart from that,
a
on
good
the
portion
other hand,
are what? Sorry?
Have been misled, and we can show them where they have made a mistake.
How's that?
We can show them that, according to the Bible, the Jews are from the tribe of Judah. As if you need a proof, but we can prove it from the Bible. There are proofs that what happened to the Jew in Jewish history to the Jews was prophesied would happen to Judah. That is what the Jews would become. That the Jews have to keep the law. The Jews had to keep the law. The Jews would be the first to return to the land. And the Jews would be persecuted before keeping the law throughout the centuries until they do return to the land. We can also show that the Jews in the end times have a task in the world. The Jews have an important task as Jews. In Zechariah it says, in those days, men out of all nations of the world shall come unto the Jews, shall grab hold of his tzitzits, say, we shall go with you, for we heard that God is with you. And throughout the Bible, this is the message. In Isaiah and so on, the temple will be rebuilt, and the nations of the world will come up to see and come up to Jerusalem to learn. So the Jews definitely have a task. This is what we're saying, and often they know it better than us. They know these sources better than us, but we just point out that this is what the sources say.
Are any of the people who are fans of your work from the B'nai Noach, the children of Noah, people who accept the seven laws of Noah? They don't believe in other gods. They believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and they believe in the Torah, but they don't want to convert to Judaism. They want to remain what's called a Ben Noach. Do you have that type as well that follow after your research?
Yes, we have people of that incarnation who follow us. A not insignificant proportion of B'nai Noach do have feelings of that nature. But we don't emphasize that. That's not our task. We don't emphasize B'nai Noach. We're not against Christianity. Christianity historically has a role in the world, has a role in the Messianic process, and we're not involved in that, not involved in trying to get people out of Christianity. But we're against Christians trying to make Jews believe like them. Because for a Jew, this is forbidden. This is against the Torah, and it is against the will of the Almighty. God wants the Jews to exist, the Jews to fulfill their messianic role, and for a Jew to accept any compromise in his belief in the unity and the belief in the one God, it effectively, whether it should be that way or not, you can argue about it, but effectively it takes him out of the Jewish people, it makes him non-Jewish, and this is against the will, and this is, and anyone who causes that to happen is going against the will of the Almighty, it's going against the command of the Bible, and it's liable to be punished for it.
Mm.
According to the Bible, not a...
Does it say the punishment for trying to convert a Jew?
It says, if you look throughout Deuteronomy, for instance, Deuteronomy 18, Deuteronomy 12, throughout Deuteronomy, it says anyone who tries to make a Jew believe in a false god or in another god other than the Almighty is liable to be put to death. It says you shall have no pity on him.
So it's like a death penalty for someone to try to convert the Jewish people.
Yes. That's according to the Bible.
It's a serious thing, and I get a few of those every once in a while. People are telling, Tamar, if you'd only see the light, Tamar, if you only let the blood of Yashki, cleanse you of your sins, and that's why, so you don't go to H-E double hockey sticks and et cetera, do you get those, Alex?
You always get letters like that. People that are missionaries are even drawn to our content. Do you find that, people argue that Christianity is messianic by nature. Missionary by nature. Do you think that's true, or do you think that there's just like extremist sects that are out there that are trying to missionize Jews?
No, a natural element of Christianity, as I understand, is that they believe it's a religious obligation to a religious, part of their religion is to bring others to believe as they do. So we're not arguing with that, but we say that doesn't apply to the Jews. It doesn't apply to the Jews because the Jews are specifically excluded from that by the source, by the Bible, which came before whatever they're trying to introduce. And it was never annulled.
All right, you've been doing a lot of research, Yair, on where the lost 10 tribes have gone, and the end of days they'll be gathered back to Israel, to their people. How is that going to happen?
We don't really know how it's going to happen. We can say that according to the Bible, according to, for instance, in Micah and Hosea, throughout the prophets, it says that in the beginning Judah will return and Judah will prepare the land, and then events will take place which are not, there will be wars, there will be all kinds of changes will take place in the world, and eventually the lost 10 tribes also will return and also will reunite with Judah. But what is certain, it almost seems very clear that we are in the beginning of this process, that Judah has begun to return to the land, and Judah is rebuilding the land, is preparing everything, and anyone who believes in the Bible should help Judah as much as they can in this task of theirs.
All right, well, let's hope that these prophecies take place soon without the wars, without the hardships attached to it. I want to thank you so much for being with us, Yair Davidi from BritAm.org. That's BritAm.org. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
All right. Well, I don't know. I get these letters really tease me off. What can I tell you? Really tease me off. You know, they murdered 6 million of our people. We just saw the forced conversions from the Fox News team, from the Islamic religion. You see a lot of these missionaries, now I'm not talking about all Christians, so no emails please. I'm talking about some Christians who feel it's their duty to try to convert every Jew that they come across or whatever. At least they're trying to do it with me and perhaps with you, as you said, Alex. But you know, just really, 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 really irks me. Really irks me.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times you get letters where they say, "Dear Alex, I really love your show, this and that. I loved how you talked about this topic and that, and blah, blah, blah." And they just start like really kissing up to you really nice, and you're like, and it's like a feel good letter, and you're starting to feel really good about what you're doing. And then like right at the end, and then it's like, and if you would only, do this or that towards, you know, these, Christian elements that I don't even want to get into. And you're just like, oh, come on. you know, like this is, I'm putting everything that I have out there to spread the light of Judaism and Torah to all these people throughout the entire world, and I'm just not going to be...
If they want to listen.
Right, yeah, we know that's the beauty of radio, right? It's, you know, people are coming in here, you know, if they want to get this content, it's voluntary. And, you know, just to think that you could try, that after all the amount of hours that I've put into this and my whole life really going into Judaism, finding Judaism, you know, finding the mitzvot of the Torah, to think that just like in one snap I'm just gonna change my mind, it's just crazy and it's wrong.
Well, if they hang hell over you, you might, huh?
Yeah. Well, I guess if you put it that way, tomorrow I think I'm in the wrong place. I gotta go.
I don't know, it just I just see so many of these religions out there, you know, either with the sword like Islam, or with they kill you with kindness, but whatever it is, it's like you've got to be their religion, otherwise you're gonna go to Hades. And that's what's so beautiful about Judaism. Judaism brings a light to the world and just says, you know what, be a good person, believe in God, observe the 7 laws of Noah, don't have idols, don't be a pagan, don't do these things. You don't have to be a Jew. The Jewish nation is something that you could be. We're not a racist nation. Anybody who wants to join the Jewish people can. However, you have to really want to do it. It has to be, this is, you know, what you feel that you want to take on the hardships of doing all the 613 commandments, which is not easy to do. You have to change your life. You have to eat, can't eat in certain places.
Yeah.
You keep the Shabbat. You can't work in certain jobs.
And when somebody wants to become a Jew, we even try to dissuade them, at first, until we see that they're really committed and they're willing to go through all the steps that it takes to make those lifestyle changes that you mentioned to become a Jew. Being a Jew is a great privilege, but it's a ton of responsibility also.
Could you imagine us kidnapping people and forcing them to be Jewish?
Yeah.
I mean, even in...
Let's do it.
No!
Oh.
No, not at all. But, you know, we were just reading the Torah about the captives. When we went to war, when we came into the land, and we, if a Jewish soldier would see a very beautiful woman who was of the enemy people, and he would want her as a wife. You're not allowed to go raping on the battlefield. The Jewish religion says you take her home to you. You make sure that her nails grow long, she shaves her head, she looks unappealing to you, she stays with you for a month so she can mourn the loss of her parents and her family. And if after a month you still want to marry her, you can. If not, you have to let her go free. You can't force her to convert to Judaism. You can't force her to stay with you. You know, she has to, this is something that if you do, she's going to be a horrible wife. She'll raise you horrible children. And we recognize this. You have to really want to be a Jew in order to be a good Jew.
And when you talk about going out to the field and taking these wives from the non-Jewish nations, then the next verse talks about, well, what happens when you have one wife, one loved, and one hated? And then the next set of verses talks about what happens when your son goes off the derech, he goes off the way of being a Jewish, and he becomes rebellious and a criminal. And the sages point out that this is what happens, you know, when you are not focused and you don't value taking a Jewish wife, and you let your eyes and your heart wander, you know, to the nations, to the other nations of the world, and you bring them into your house, that all of a sudden the marriages go a little bit kooky, and then all the kids also, they don't turn out right. So
you have to be careful. Saying your father killed your grandfather, you're like, how are you supposed to raise a kid with this woman unless she really comes and sees that, wow, you know what, the Jewish people are an amazing people,
and we have cases
and
of this,
they don't
like
beat their wives like my father beat my mother,
right?
You know,
I mean,
they don't kill their daughters because she looked at another man. This is really a cool, you know, people. I'm lucky to belong to these people,
and we have primary examples of this, like in on Shavuot when we read the Megillat Ruth. You know, Ruth was a Moabite,
Ruth,
and
right.
She embraced Judaism, and she was rewarded for her embrace. She was the grandmother of David, our second king.
And the great-grandmother, I think.
Great.
And it was interesting because Naomi, her mother-in-law, told her, go home, don't come with me. And Ruth pushed, so she really wanted to be a convert, really wanted to make her people, Naomi's people, her people, where Naomi would live, she would live, where she would die, she would die. This is the heart of somebody who really wants to do that. But please, people, don't
try to convert me.
Okay? All right, yeah. If yours is great, great. I'm happy for you. Leave me alone. All right. When we get back, we're going to be speaking with Brigitte Gabriel, a very wonderful, wonderful woman from Lebanon. We're going to find out about her new book that came out, and about the Christian Lebanese.